I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Welcome to the weekend edition of the Daily Stoic. Each weekday, we bring you a meditation inspired by the ancient Stoics, something that can help you live up to those four Stoic virtues of courage, justice, wisdom, and temperance. And here on the weekend, we take a deeper dive into those same topics. We interview Stoic philosophers, we reflect, we prepare, we think deeply about the challenging issues of our time, and we work through this philosophy in a way that's more possible here when we're not rushing to work or to get the kids to school, when we have the time to think, to go for a walk, to sit with our journals, and to prepare for what the future will bring. I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorn sponsored today's episode. Thorn takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorn, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorn. Go to thorn.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. thorn.fit/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80. Hey, it's Ryan Holiday. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Stoic Podcast. I'm going to get right into this one because the guest today has a really interesting, if not harrowing, story. His name is Furkat Jadot. He's a Uyghur, a young man who came to America in 2011, basically fleeing what had been the serious threat of persecution. But unfortunately, his mother, also a Uyghur, was denied a passport as they tried to come to America.
And so in 2017, when the Chinese government's crackdown on the Uyghur population began to escalate, she was detained. 2 months later, she was sent to what's essentially a re-education camp. And Furqat has been without his mother, without his family. And at the same time, he's trying to rebuild his life here in the United States as an immigrant. He's also having to deal with complete uncertainty and fear and worry about the safety of his mother. And you know, he could have kept silent about this. He could have just tried to deal with it privately. But I think in a very stoic fashion, he's stood up. He's become an international advocate, brought all sorts of attention to the plight of the Uyghurs. And he and his family have really suffered for this. And yet that has not deterred him. So when we talk about courage here on the podcast, we don't mean this in the abstract. We don't just mean, you know, the things you say on the internet. We mean, what do you do when you are faced with a really complex ethical dilemma, but also a moral obligation because you see something to say something? And look, we'll get into his story, but it's really a harrowing and eye-opening story about something that's happening right now in the world. You know, we can read about the Holocaust, we can read about the Rwandan genocide, we can read about the Armenian genocide, we can read about these things, and it feels like they happened a long time ago. Maybe we even tell ourselves, oh, I would have done something. But this is happening right now, and so I think it brings up the question of what are you doing about it? Do you even know about it, or are you too busy focusing on, you know, your own stuff? And certainly, I failed that test, which is why I'm interested in exploring it, why we're going to have this guest and another one in a few weeks. That's one of the reasons I reached out recently to the Uyghur Human Rights Project, which has been at the forefront of drawing both attention and resources towards the plight of, what is it, at this point, millions of people who are in concentration camps, who are being deprived of their rights, in some cases being sterilized, being used for forced labor. It's a very alarming thing. I'll let Furqat do most of the talking here about that because I think it's better to get it direct from the source. But I did want to give a plug for the Uyghur Human Rights Project. You can check that out at uhrp.org. And you can donate at uhrp.org/support, which I have done. There are refugees, not currently in China, but all over, who've managed to get out, have passports, who are trying to get somewhere safe. And it can be as little as a $3,000 plane ticket or the cost of a few hours of legal work to help free them. Or it could just be helping cover some of their legal expenses when they come to a new country with little in the way of job skills. Or again, these problems can seem very big and very uninfluenceable. But in fact, you can help an individual person get through this. It's like something less than $20,000. You can essentially save a person who might otherwise be reinterned in a concentration camp. You can save them. And you can follow Furqat on Twitter. Go to @FERKAT_JAWDAT. I asked him how we can help. He said one way people can help is, of course, by, you know, making sure that the things you buy have no association with this region of China. He said also you can donate to the UHRP. But also follow him on Twitter because he tries to get out the word about it. And so he's looking to build his profile and platform to help the spread of this message. So check that out. There's a link in the bio, of course, to all this stuff. Again, listen to this interview. Listen with your mind open. Don't let your political views influence what you're seeing and hearing. It's really important. And we will hopefully have some more for you on this issue soon.
Well, first off, let me thank you for doing this. It's been a journey for me to sort of try to wrap my head around this issue. And when I was asking who might be able to help me, your name came up several times. So I really appreciate this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's pretend that I'm an American that knows nothing about the Uyghur situation, that's maybe vaguely heard about it in the news. They know something, you know, they know people are concerned about something that's happening in China. They know it's potentially kind of an international flashpoint. Like, what would you say to them? How would you explain what this is?
So kind of give some background. The Chinese government took over the land, which called East Turkestan in 1949. And then earlier before that, on the late 1900s, they gave the name as Xinjiang, which means in Mandarin Chinese, the new territory or new dominion. So since 1949, there have been many instances that the Chinese government oppressed or tried to integrate the Uyghur identity into the major, the Han identity, Han culture. But in China, there are 56 different nations, and then Uyghurs are one of the largest minority groups. So we have our own unique identity, the culture, and then we are mostly believe in Islam. And then we have our own language, the food, the clothing, everything is unique. And then we even look different than the majority of Han Chinese people. So when I was in China, I went to university in one of the Chinese cities. And then I also went to Beijing for some other reasons. So wherever I go, like the Chinese people, they came up to me and then asked me in English while I was in China, like where I am from. So I had to reply them back in Mandarin Chinese that I'm an Uyghur and I'm from Xinjiang. So they just get shocked. They were like, oh, so you are Chinese? I said, yeah, I'm Chinese. And then it kind of kept going until 2009. So June 2009, there was a huge clash between the Uyghur workers who were sent to inner Chinese cities as the factory workers, along with the Han Chinese workers there. So a couple of the Uyghur people got beaten up so badly, and then some of them had died. So on the July 5th, the university students in Urumqi, the capital city of East Turkestan, or as they called Xinjiang, they organized a peaceful protest. They were just sitting silently in front of the government offices, asking their response for those killings. But it was brought up lots of tension between the Chinese police and the regular citizens, as well as the Uyghurs. So it became a clash between the Uyghurs and the Chinese. So more than 200 people died. And then since then, China started their stronger campaign. And also they called as Strike Hard campaign against three evil forces, the extremist, the terrorist, and then the separatist. So especially after 2016, when the new party secretary Cheng Chuanguo came to transfer to the Xinjiang from Tibet, he started large scale of the police state systems. Like they have installed the cameras in every 50 meters or every 100 meters of the street on every corners. And then they have started setting up like huge or large the camps, and then started detaining people who went to Turkey or the other Islamic countries, or even came to US to visit their family members or study. On the beginning, they detained them for about 15 to 20 days and released them. And then later on, it became much longer, and then more people are being detained. So my mom was one of them, and along with like her two younger brothers and then five different people from my father's side.
I'm curious, because I want to get into that. I'm curious, so your decision to come to America, what was that like? I mean, I imagine just the journey of immigrating is stressful and scary under ordinary circumstances. Just talk to me about the decision to leave where you're from and come to a new place.
Yes. So in China, until recent years, I think two years ago, the Han Chinese, they had one-child policy. But for the minorities like Uyghurs and Kazakhs, they allowed two kids. But I was the first, I was the oldest, and then I had a younger brother. And then in 1998, my mom, she gave a birth to my twin younger sisters. So since then, my father started getting lots of issues or challenges from his working place. And then by 2005, around 2005, that he got laid off from his work. And then he came to US to apply for asylum. And then once his case was approved, he applied for the whole family, including my mom and then the four kids. So at the time, all the four kids, like we were under the age of 18, so we were able to get our Chinese passports. And then although my mom was cleared by the US government, to come to the U.S. to reunite with the remaining family members, Chavez declined to receive a Chinese passport. So since January 2006, it's been almost like 15 years right now that my dad and my mom got separated from each other. And then the last time I saw my mom in person was on 2010 September. So it's been more than 10 years right now.
And for really no reason, right? Like no sort of justifiable reason. It's just an arbitrary policy that as human beings, you were found yourself on the wrong side of.
Yeah. So the local police, they gave different reasons, and then the reasons kept changing as we provide documents to support our justification or to get her a Chinese passport. Like they asked, on the beginning, they said that my dad, he came to the U.S., he overstayed his visa. And then later on, after we came, we came to the U.S., they started saying that, oh yeah, you have your whole family in the U.S. right now. And then later on, they asked my dad to go back to talk to the local police, which my dad cannot because he applied for the political asylum.
Right.
And then later on, they asked us to provide some documents, both from the U.S. side as well as the Chinese embassy or the consul in the United States, that shows that we never committed any crimes, mainly against the Chinese government, even though we are living in the U.S. So which we did. We got some documents notarized by the Chinese consul or the Chinese embassy here in Washington, D.C., and we sent to them. And then they just kept changing their reasons.
I feel like that would be so aggravating, but also, like, how do you not just despair? You know what I mean? Like, because you're not, it's like no amount of logic is going to work in this situation. And yet it's fundamentally unfair at the same time.
It is. And then it's really stressful for my mom especially, and then as well as to us. Like every day and every time we talk about it, like that's the main conversation is like, mom, when can you come to the U.S.? Or like, she's asking us like, son, or like, when can we get together so we can live a normal life, like the whole family together? So it's been 15 stressful years for her especially, and then especially after that, in like from 2011, that she has been living by herself. Like she has her mom and then her siblings in the same city, but still end of the day, like she has to wake up by herself, she has to eat, she has to cook by herself, and then end of the day, like she has to sleep by herself. And then sometimes, like if you cannot call her, maybe because of the Chinese government, they cut off the communication or we get busy, the 24 hours, like there is nobody that she can talk to. Like that silence within the four walls is just eating her alive.
So how do you keep hope going? Like, I mean, I could see someone just sort of, you know, I could see that breaking a person. How have you guys maintained hope?
It keeps changing. Before this camp started, like we were hopeful because either side, like from my mother's or like us in the U.S., we didn't commit anything against the Chinese government or the U.S. laws. And then she was cleared by the U.S. government to come to the U.S. legally. So only thing that missing is her Chinese passport. So, but the camp started and then she was detained for more than 15 months on two different occasions. And then it became much challenging. So, sometimes, be honestly, we lose hope, but I still got to do something. Like,
sure.
So I still have to find some way or try to find some ways to bring her to the U.S.
Walk me through what these camps are, because, you know, in the U.S., we have such, as you know, we have this sort of heightened rhetoric about things. So it's hard to know like what's really bad and what's kind of bad and what's sort of being exaggerated for political purposes and what isn't. Like you're calling them camps. I've heard them described as concentration camps. I've heard people say that it's genocide. What are these camps that people are being put into?
So let's start with the reasons for people being locked up in those camps. So
okay.
there is no like specific the court procedures or some legal process about who will be being detained for how long or when will be released. So the police, they just come to your house at random places and then just take you to some unknown places. And then your family members, like your own, like husband or wife or your kid or your siblings, they cannot even ask about your whereabouts. If they get, if they question the police or the local government about their loved one's whereabouts, they will also be being detained. And then some people are being locked up because that they have some family members who are living outside of China. Like my mom, for example. She never committed any crime, but she was detained just because that she has her family members living in the US. And then my other relatives, they have some relatives or family members living outside of China. And then some of the reasons are like traveling to abroad or growing a longer beard for the man as a Muslim, and right. Or wearing a hijab or going to mosque or praying or fasting during Ramadan or having extra food in your house or owning a tent or having WhatsApp on your phone or having VPN on your phone or having like browse through the foreign media or the news outlets. Like those are the reasons that people will just get locked up in those places. And then if you go inside the camps, like from the former detainees, there have been the Uyghurs, Kazakhs, both men and women. They have been detained for months to years. And then maybe because of some outside pressure, like from the governments or the NGOs, some of them have been released. And then once they arrive safely to the other countries, they start speaking out. So there is a lady, a couple ladies in the U.S. right now, actually. One of them, she gave a testimony in the U.S. Congress, I think it's a year or two ago, where she said that it was a really small cell where they have 64 ladies. And then even though they sleep side by side at night, they don't have enough space to sleep, accommodate all the people. So they have to have one third of them to stand up while the two third of them are sleeping. And then they take turns. And then there are cameras in every single corner of the woman's cell that monitors for 24 hours. And then sometimes that the guards that they just come and then pick a girl who's looking like who looks nice and just rape her in front of everyone else. And then all different torture, like the food deprivation, sleep deprivation. And then also they were brought to some factories. Like they built up the camps, and then along with the camps, they also built some satellite factories around them so they can directly transfer the people between the camps and then the factories and use them as slaves.
The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening, but depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. It's always sensitive talking about these things, but Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to doctor-trusted ED treatments such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor's visits. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance needed. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/TDS. That's hims.com/TDS for your personalized ED treatment options. Hard mints are a chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with your healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Is that really the point of it? Like, I that's something I'm having trouble wrapping my head around. I mean, there is a certain illogicalness to fascism and totalitarianism. It's so often just about control and sort of domination. But is the purpose of it ultimately to create a labor force? Is the purpose of it extermination? Is it just arbitrary, you know, like, is it like what are they hoping to accomplish with the re-education camps and then with the excesses or the truly horrendous stuff you're talking about?
I think there are multiple reasons. So one is, like, just one example is, like, when I was in elementary school, at one of the classes, we learned that in socialism, when it reaches on its peak, there will be no difference between the nations or the people. There is only one nation, or there is only one group of people. But we grew up learning that there are 56 different nations with their own unique culture, identity in China alone, let alone like other world, other countries. It kind of shocked me at the time. But now, if I look back, everything happening from like Tibet's to the South Mongolia recently, to the Uyghurs, the Kazakhs, and then the others, like, everything is going in that, like, the same direction. They are forcing the other nations with their own identity to be sterilized or to be sensitized to become a Han Chinese-like people. Like, let them to think in a Chinese way. Let them eat the pork or the same food as the Chinese people do. Let them dress up in the same way as the Han Chinese, and then let them learn the Han Chinese history, the culture. So that's one aspect, like assimilating the different unique nations into the major Han Chinese society. And the second one is, as part of this One World, One Belt, especially it is the whole system, whole program starts from our region, East Turkestan. From here, it expands through the Central Asia, then to the Europe and other parts of the world. So they want to get the region 100% in control, so they don't have any issues come up along the way that will destabilize the region or directly impact their One Belt, One Road initiative.
And then, yeah, this might be a little crazy, but I actually heard from a pretty high-ranking government person that he was sort of saying that his view of it is that it's almost like, and maybe this is histrionic, but I'd be curious your take, that it's almost like, it's almost practice, right? Like that it's, if you're sort of intent on world domination, what's happening with the Uyghurs is sort of a pilot program or a test run on stamping down dissent or differences wherever you happen to be.
Exactly. So they used the region and the Uyghur people as the lab rats or the test ground for their high-tech surveillance or the AI, the artificial intelligence, the machine learning, the surveillance systems. And then also, like, they started like a cell phone scanning in our region for the Uyghur people. Later on, it was expanded to like Shanghai and then Beijing, some other major like Chinese cities, metro stations, and then public roads. And then after this Hong Kong protest started, they started building camps around the area as well. And recently, there are a couple articles about the huge scale camps are being built in the Tibet region as well. And then also, like, some other countries are looking up to China. So if they get succeeded, they will expand or export those technologies like facial recognition cameras, the DNA scanning, sequencing machines, and then the methods, the policies that they have implemented towards the Uyghur people to other countries.
So this argument that what they're trying to do is sort of stamp out differences, that they want uniformity, they want a singular culture, you know, a cynical person might sort of go like, well, what does it matter? Like, maybe you shouldn't just, like, you know, people go like, well, just don't grow your beard long, or just, you know, sort of convert religiously. Or one of the things I write about in Stoicism is that with the ancient Stoics, they faced sort of tyrannical leaders as well. There was this kind of insistence on being yourself, on being different, even though that would often draw the ire of the rulers. There's a Stoic I was just writing about, a guy named Agrippinus. And Agrippinus sort of stands out in Nero's regime. He says, you know, I want to be the red thread amidst all the black and the gray. Like, he's like, I want to stand out. Mm-hmm. The downside, of course, of standing out is eventually, you know, Nero has him executed. Walk me through the courage it takes to insist on your heritage or your religious identity when people are basically threatening to take away your freedom if you don't comply.
It is hard. And then sometimes it really challenges or risks your own, like, lives or the people around yourself as well. So in the beginning, they started by locking up people who are kind of like heavily on the religious side. Like, they pray five times or they have like the beard or they wear hijabs. But it's not only about that. It's about everything. And then they just use those as the reason to lock you up. Like, my mom, as she has been separated from her husband for more than 10 years and then from her kids for like 7-8 years, it was about like in 2018 when she was detained. Like, she had lots of health issues. So she wasn't able to pray five times a day. She doesn't wear a scarf because she has to go to the police station, the government offices multiple times to get some ways, find some ways to get her a Chinese passport. And then she doesn't fast during Ramadan as well. But after all, she was detained for more than 15 months. And then at some point, she was sent to a prison for 7 years. After I spoke out, after I became a public, they released her. And then in last November, in 2019 November, the Chinese government, they released their own statement saying that my mom has never been detained. So from a person who was criminally, as they claim, was sent to the camp to be re-educated, at the end, she was labeled or she was told that she has never been detained. So that's their logic. Like, there is no way that you can prevent it from happening.
Sure. Right. It's like that famous, the poem about sort of first they came for the Jews, then they came for the socialists, then they came for the gypsies, then they came for me, but there was no one left to stand up for me.
Exactly. So they came for the Tibets, and then they came for the Uyghurs, and then right now is the Hong Kong. And then the yesterday, about the South Mongolian or the other minorities within other parts of China, like, they start banning their own language from the schools. And then first step is maybe the language, and then the religion, and then the books, and then the clothing, and then the food, and then some other reasons that they can just come up with, start locking up people.
So you decided to speak out, and again, as I was saying, I realize even talking to me is probably not without cost for you. There was a time where you got a message from your mother, I think last year, right, where it was very clear that pressure was being put on her to silence you.
Yes. So my mom was detained for the first time in November 2017. And then after 22 days, she was released. And then we talked for another like 2 or 3 months until February 6, 2018. And then she was detained for the second time. that she left me a voice message asking me to not to worry about her, to take care of my family, and then asked us to study and work harder. But at the end, on her message, she said she doesn't know if she can come back or when she can come back. So a month later, five people from my father's side, my father's older sister, who was a government official, retired government official, along with her husband, their married son, my father's younger brother, and the youngest brother's son, five people from four different households were locked up in one day. And then here in the U.S., like myself, my dad, and other relatives, we came together to discuss about what should we do. Should we start speaking out? Should we start meeting some U.S. government officials or the NGOs to seek some help, or just stay silent, wait to see what will happen? At the end, we were scared, because we know that if we start speaking out or if we publicly criticize the Chinese government, we will put our family members in much more danger. So we stayed quiet. I stayed quiet from February until September 2018. But within that 7 months, I wasn't able to get any information from my mom or other family members. The only thing I heard is, how was those camps, as I described earlier? Like, there is a physical torture, there is a mental torture, sleep deprivation, food deprivation, the rapes, forced labor, forced sterilization. So everything I heard about or to see on the news about those camps made me decide to speak out from 2018 September. So from that time, I risked especially my mom and everything. So I knew when I started speaking out that there are some prices that I have to pay, or there are some people that they will be suffered or punished because of the way I was speaking out. So, which was prone to be true.
I don't know your mother, obviously, but is it crazy to think that your mom would probably be proud of the stand you're taking and probably want you to be doing what you're doing?
Yes. So at the beginning, I didn't know anything about my mom. And then I just wanted to do something so I can face my mom either in this world or the next world. Like when we see each other again for the next time. Like just wanted to be able to say by looking at her eyes, like, mom, I didn't sit idle while you were suffering in the prison or the camps. I did something as a son to save you. So after I started speaking out, there were multiple times that I was indirectly threatened by the Chinese police or the government about my behaviors or my publicity. Like, they questioned my aunt and my cousins 48 hours in the police station, asked them to sign a contract stating that they will cut off all the contacts with anyone in the U.S. If not, they will also be sent to the camps. My 75-year-old grandmother was also being threatened by the Chinese police. When I sent up my kid's picture or my sister's picture along with some cash through like multiple friends to her house, she declined to look at those pictures. She declined to receive that money. My 75-year-old grandmother. And then later on, after I had a meeting in 2019, March with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, the 3 days after the meeting, I got the news that my mom, along with my aunt and uncle, they were transferred to the prisons from the camps. And then my aunt and my uncle, they were sentenced for 7 and 8 years because of my meeting with a U.S. government official.
Have you felt any pressure here in America? Like, do you feel like their reach extends even into America? Like, have you felt uncomfortable here or noticed things that were perhaps strange or unnerving?
Not really directly to myself in the U.S., but the direct threat will be easier than the mental threat or the threat that comes to somebody that you love.
Yeah.
Because as a person, that you can make a decision about what you do, and then are you going to suffer or are you going to pay the price for your actions, but you don't want to put your mom especially or your family members in danger because of the way that you are speaking out or because of the way that you are doing something. So that's a really hard choice, especially after on last March that they transferred my mom from camp to prison. It took me a whole week to think through what should I do next. Should I keep doing what I'm doing, or should I just get scared and become quiet? Because I didn't want to lose my mom. I was scared, and then I knew the Chinese government is capable enough to do something or just let her die.
Right. Oh, man. What is so the courage that it takes for you, I get, right? There's risk there. What should I do? What should Americans do? Especially, I mean, I think the logic there of like, hey, look, this is a pilot program. This is testing for a larger potential injustice. To me, ties up our self-interest in it. Although the Stoics would argue that, you know, sort of this idea of sympatheia, we're all part of this larger whole, and the idea that you could just turn a blind eye to the sufferings of other people because it doesn't affect you is just not how it works. But like, what impact can a ordinary person listening to this have? What should we be doing?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that just a normal citizen or the normal American people that they can do without harming anything or without losing anything. Like, mm-hmm. Boycotting the Chinese products, there is nothing that can beat the free labor. Like here in the US, our federal minimum wage is $7.50. In any state, the lowest that you can pay to hire someone to make your shoes is at least $7.50, which right. is 50 Chinese yuan. Your minimum $1 minimum wage will be 50 Chinese yuan, and then whole month, it is maybe 1500 Chinese yuan, which is like $200. So for 3 days salary here in the US, that they can use multiple people as a slave labor in China to make those shoes. That's why many of our like factories or the businesses are moving back to China. And then I'm really glad that the President Trump that he's trying to bring back lots of things. So China is benefiting from the people like my mom, my brother, my uncle, my sisters, using them as a slave labor to make those products, the shoes, the clothes, the Nike like sneakers, or the Adidas. So I ask all the people to boycott the Made in China products, because you don't know which one is made in the first the camps, the concentration right. camps, or the factories with the forced labor.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. I talk about that in Growth Hacker Marketing. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stoic. That's netsuite.com/stoic.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
It's a tricky thing, right? For Daily Stoic, we make a bunch of different products. And so that was sort of my first, although I'd worked at a company called American Apparel for a number of years that mm-hmm. was one of the largest garment manufacturers in the United States. But that was sort of one of my first experiences with sort of logistics and you know, manufacturing. I think people, it's hard, right? Like, you're like, okay, we make these challenge coins. It's like, you could get it 10 times cheaper overseas. And so I think a lot of people just look at these things on a spreadsheet. I know I've looked at those spreadsheets and you go, hey, this is made in America and it costs, well, I was just looking at the cost to print a book. It was like $17 to print it in the US from one manufacturer. And it was $1.27 to ship it in, you know, to manufacture it in China. So exactly. I think people look at these spreadsheets and they go, well, there's no way I can, you know, it's an obvious choice. But I think your point is what that's obscuring is massive, massive human rights violations and a complicity in a thing you would never want on your conscience. So it's actually been really hard for us to find, like, we're sort of had this thing. We're like, whenever we can, as much as we can, we're going to make everything in the US. Sometimes it's hard because you hire someone and then they subcontract it out. You can't always be sure, but it's actually been like a lot of work to try to manufacture here in America. And so I think consumers, by deciding to support people who do that, you make it easier.
Exactly. So yes. And then another thing is, like, it's not only about the human rights or feeling pity for someone like the Uyghurs that you are boycotting the Chinese products, but also, like, China is the strongest threat, the biggest threat to the U.S. economy, U.S. democracy, in many different ways.
Right.
And then it's not only about the Uyghur issue. It is about the Uyghurs, the Tibets, the Hong Kong, the South Mongolian, or any other people, like, even the Chinese, Han Chinese people themselves within China or living under the CCP rule. But also, once they get rid of the blockers as the Uyghurs and the Tibets, the China won't stop within the Chinese borders. Like, we have seen that they are expanding towards the Indian borders. And then they expand through, like, other countries through One Road, One Belt. And then they challenge the U.S. Army, the U.S. Forces, or the U.S. influence in around the globe because they have economic strong ties with other countries, sure, as well. So if we can cut their economic side, if we can at least, like, hurt them dollar every day or like dollar per person, we can save our next generations as well. It's not only about my mom. It's not only about my people. I'm an Uyghur American living in Washington, D.C. I work as a contractor to the U.S. government on the Affordable Care Act project for the healthcare.gov. I'm a Uyghur American, but I'm speaking out not only because of my mom, but my people, but also for my own kids who are born in the U.S., who are living in Washington, D.C. area, for their future.
So... I realize, like, I don't want to get you in trouble, so feel free to sidestep this however you need to sidestep. But I'm yes. curious too, you know, if America wants to be this sort of beacon of freedom, if it wants to have a moral voice in saying, like, hey, this is wrong, how can we do that when we also turn a blind eye to injustices here at home? Like, I'm thinking about the argument of it's rather strange when you look, for instance, at the history of the Second World War. America goes to Europe to, you know, sort of fight the Germans to stop that totalitarian state, you know, to ultimately ends up stopping the Holocaust, racial discrimination, religious discrimination, etc. Meanwhile, we have what is effectively an apartheid system in the American South, and we've turned an eye to many injustices ourselves. So I'm not saying that a state has to be perfect to get involved, but it does strike me as tricky that the sort of that different political voices are coming down on different sides of the Uyghur China issue, and there's some moral complexity there. Do you get what I'm saying?
I got it. Yes. So I'll say, like, you don't have to be perfect enough to judge me or stop me from doing something illegal or unhuman. Like, I'm not a perfect person, but if I see someone is getting beaten up on the street, should I stand up? yes, I should, because that's my moral, like, obligation to stop something from happening. And then, yes, here in the U.S., like, we have lots of issues. Like, we are number one on the COVID cases, and then we have more than 200,000 people who lost their lives. Every single one of them is precious. Like, they are like family members of somebody else. We have Black Lives Matter. We have some other issues. But it doesn't mean that we have to stop questioning other people, other governments.
Right. No, it's like the NBA is an interesting, to go to your point about sort of using capitalism in business and where you're spending your dollars. The NBA is sort of very active about Black Lives Matter, and then it's been quieter on the human rights abuses in China. And it's been strange because the argument, it's almost like one side is saying, they're trying to say, well, you don't care about China, so Black Lives Matter doesn't count. And then other people are saying, how can you be mad about police abuses here in the United States and then cashing enormous checks from a government built explicitly on that kind of authoritarian abuses. So it's like, it's almost as if instead of saying, hey, injustices matter, it matters how we treat the vulnerable, we have to stand up even when it doesn't feel like it affects us directly, instead of kind of insisting on general rules, we're trying to just like, we're just engaging in what they call whataboutism. We're just going like, well, what about that? And then it's like they cancel each other out, and then we're not morally obligated to do anything.
Exactly. So yeah, like the NBA is a really great example, because in the US, they benefit from free speech. So they can say anything they want or stand up on the either side that they want against their own government or the political right. system. But when it comes to China, especially the Communist Party itself, is a big bully. So if you listen to him, it will bully you until you stand up for your own rights. And then if one NBA stands up, they will just shut down all the NBA services, the shows, and then the selling of their products in China. But if we have the NBA and then the other, like the Nike, the Apple, like all the big corporations like around the globe, they stand up on the same time, the China will feel the pain of losing everything in one shot. So they will back down.
Well, that's maybe a good place to sort of wind down. And I'm curious. So the Stoics, I don't know how familiar you are with Stoicism, but I think you would enjoy it and mm-hmm. get a lot out of it, because it's all about these sort of really complex, difficult situations that require courage and an emphasis on justice but also wisdom. But you know, the idea for the Stoics, they're sort of like, well, you got to focus on what you control, where you can have impact, and you can't get too beaten down by the hopelessness of a large, you know, complex situation. And so a lot of people maybe think that means that the Stoic is sort of just inwardly focused or just thinks really small. Like how, it's sort of the question of, well, how do people come to get, like, what can one person do? And then also, if we're only thinking about what one person can do, it maybe prevents us from coming together as a collective whole. And sometimes that's what you need to solve a problem. So I'm just like, what do you think about, like, I get your point about sort of boycotting and speaking to representatives and stuff like that. But, you know, maybe the NBA is thinking like, well, what are we just supposed to take a multi-billion-dollar hit and then it not make a single ounce of difference? I think people think this too. They're like, well, should I just speak out and then lose my career over it? And you must have thought this too. You're like, well, I'm going to speak out, and really the major effect is it's going to negatively impact my mother's situation. How do you think about how this all integrates as part of a larger movement?
So I have that feeling as well. And then many other people around myself, like especially from my own community, the people, especially the ones that are staying silent, like, what can I do by speaking out or like tweeting about right. it or just talking about my mom? I'm just one person. And then that's the mentality that Chinese government, they wanted you to have as well. That's the exactly word that a Chinese agent who reached out to me on WeChat last year, who told me, like, you are just one person who's going against the superpower Chinese government. You can do nothing. But in fact, yes, if I'm just myself, I'm just nobody. But with the people like you and your listeners and then other like media organizations, like I become stronger, my voice becomes louder. And then that was the exact reason that after being sentenced for 7 years in prison, my mom was being released. So if only one NBA stands up, yes, they will lose maybe billions. And then if Volkswagen stands up to say, hey, we're going to shut down our factories and then we're going to lay off all the workers and we're going to stop selling cars or like we're going to stop doing business with you because you are forced laboring or they're using the forced labor in the factories or you have concentration camps, and then they might not lose billions. But if 5 companies or the 10 companies or 50 companies, they voice together, it will make the Chinese government to change their policies.
I think that's beautifully said. And look, I'll talk about this in the intro, or I will have already done that. But sort of the history of Stoicism is about, and I think history too is about people who took a stand and they were alone, but eventually that was no longer the case. And I mean, case in point, you've begun speaking about this, and now you and I are talking, and I hope that the people who are listening, they begin to talk to someone. And this is how movements start with one person deciding, exactly, as you said, to just not, to be able to look your mother in the face and say, I did something. That can have an enormous ripple effect. And one person can change history.
Exactly.
Furkat, thank you so much. You're a true inspiration. And where would you point people to if they wanted to donate money, if there was a specific petition or agency they should reach out to? Where would you leave us?
I will suggest the Uyghur Human Rights Project, the UHRP.org, that they are an organization based in Washington, D.C., who are doing a tremendous amount of job for advocating the Uyghur rights in the U.S. government and around the globe as well. Also the Uyghur American Association. And then there is a bill, I forget the exact name, I think it's HR is for the House, HR 6210.
That's the bill about Uyghur rights, right?
Yeah, the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, I guess. We just passed from the House of Representatives this week. So it is on its way to the Senate. So if the people can just call their own senators and then ask them to be sponsor or add their voice to the bill so it can be sent to the president as soon as possible so we can prevent the items from coming to the U.S. in the first place.
Now, thank you so much. And look, we have this weird trend in America right now is sort of in the it's enormously hypocritical, but a somewhat anti-immigrant bent in our society, you know, despite the fact that like my own grandparents came here as refugees from totalitarianism in Europe. But I just wanted to say, I'm proud to hear that you're an American. I'm proud and inspired by the work you're doing. I'm glad you're here. And it's truly wonderful to talk and be. We could use many more people like you. And frankly, you are holding truer to what it means to be an American with the life you're leading and the actions you're taking than people who have been here for many, many generations. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Ryan.
If you're liking this podcast, we would love for you to subscribe. Please leave us a review on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast listening apps. It really helps. And tell a friend.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.